Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Happy Wednesday, Nashville. Michelle Knezovic. We've got Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe today. Nick Kieser with us on the ones and the twos. I am on heading into hour number four of Sports Talk Radio this morning. Got a lot to talk about, Junie, today. But first off, how are we doing? How are you this morning?
Doing really good. You know, got some leaks of the NFL schedule this morning, which I have some big opinions on, especially with the Titans being announced who they're playing in London. We all knew they were going to be in London this year, but we didn't know who against. And I have some strong feelings about that game that was announced this morning. But other than that, it's Wednesday, trying to get over the hump of the weekend, heading to Florida this weekend. So trying to get out there. You know, it's Shayna's first Mother's Day, so you know where you are. Little treatment on the vacation. But how about you, Michelle? How are we doing this morning?
Doing great. Quick mention, everybody. Mother's Day is Sunday, so do what you got to do and make sure you are prepared for this Sunday. Kieser, how are we doing today?
Good morning. Yes, Mother's Day is coming up, and it's also Teacher Appreciation Week for those who celebrate that too. So, and yes, Michelle, I guess, qualifies for that.
Hey, I'm a professor.
But I will say to my own mom, she deserves the flowers that she gets. So it's a double duty for us this week.
Okay, say thank you to your teachers, your moms, everybody out there this morning. But Junie, to your point, they did announce some of the international games that will be played this year. The Tennessee Titans will play Week 6 in London, October 15th, against the Baltimore Ravens. And this is pretty interesting. The Jacksonville Jaguars will play back-to-back in London. I guess just one step closer to the Jacksonville Jaguars being the UK Jaguars.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've been consistently playing in London, you know, for years.
Team?
I mean, basically, you know, the NFL was like, well, what team could we get away with, you know, kind of sending over yearly? And, you know, they look at all the small market teams, and obviously Green Bay with their history, they're not going to do that. So, the next smallest market is Jacksonville, and they, you know, typically always suck. So that's why they've been sending them over there. And now that, you know, they have a good head coach and they got a good quarterback, it actually makes them for, you know, some interesting buzz. They're going to be taking on the Bills. I mean, that's going to be a really good game out there in London.
Well, and I think the interesting thing is, too, I don't know, I saw a press conference with Trevor Lawrence last year, and he specifically mentioned the London game, when they were in London this past season, was when it all clicked for him, being an NFL quarterback. And he spoke on, you know, getting over that hump of, you know, sophomore season with the Jaguars. He has the new coach in Doug Peterson, but that was the moment it just clicked for him in playing quarterback. And I mean, halfway through the year last year, we saw a major switch in Trevor Lawrence, and that's when the Jags went on that huge winning streak. So it looks like London means a lot for that organization.
Well, I think that actually is a good thing for Jacksonville, you know, kind of doing it back to back. It's a long road trip. And when you have a team, a big part of a team and their success is their bonding. And when you go on a road trip across the ocean
to cross the pond
to the European nation, that's gonna be some good bonding time for that team. They're gonna be over there for two solid weeks, long plane rides. Those guys are gonna really get together, and for a group that was on the upward trajectory last year, for them to build on that this year, I think a road trip like that could actually do more benefiting them than hurt them.
Switching to our local team in the AFC South, I mentioned they will play the Ravens October 15th, Week 6 in London. And we want your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We're going to be taking your thoughts, your texts, your calls all show long. We are live from our game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical this morning. And if you want to watch our beautiful faces, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. But a topic got brought up this morning between Robbie and I on Robbie and Rex Road. And Junie, I got a text from you midway through this topic. You were ready. You wanted to talk about this right off the bat this morning. And we want to get your thoughts on this as well. How much will this year play into Mike Vrabel's tenure with the Tennessee Titans? What could make Mike Vrabel's position as the head coach not be as secure. You know, last season we looked at this team, and you and I had this conversation last year, whether it was right before J-Rob got fired or right after John Robinson got fired, and this team went on a 7-game losing streak. I looked at last year, and I didn't put much blame on Mike Vrabel. I understand that they ended up losing 7 games in a row. That's not good. Not good. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're Bill Belichick. It doesn't matter if you're Andy Reid. That does not look good. And for Mike Vrabel, who has been looked at and I believe has proved that he is one of the top coaches in the NFL at such a young age, that he can do things with teams and, you know, play with that chip on his shoulder and get things out of players to get their best ability, between getting guys off practice squads and plugging and playing them and, you know, beating L.A. when Derrick Henry got hurt and nobody gave them a shot. But you fire your general manager and you hire a new general manager. But I think it's clear that Mike Vrabel will have more say and has had more say when it comes to moves that are being made and, you know, drafting and more of the general manager side of things. We ask, well, who has final say? And they'll say Amy has final say. But I think it's fair to say that Mike Vrabel has probably more say than Rand Carthon at this point, in addition to being the head coach. So when you look at this situation, Junie, if this year doesn't pan out, how much do you put on Mike Vrabel?
So I made the comments last year, and this was after J-Rob got fired, because, you know, J-Rob was the scapegoat for this team when they went down in the position that they were put in. And I said that, you know, if the Titans kind of go with this same core group of players without a contingency plan, mm-hmm. that he would be put on the hot seat. Well, guess what? They drafted Will Levis. And I think that is the contingency plan that is going to save Mike Vrabel from being on the hot seat this season. Because I just thought that, you know, with the trajectory of the team, the way they kind of peaked in 2020 and 2021, we saw the writing of the wall with, you know, some of these players getting hurt, and you know these guys getting a little bit older, Kevin Byard, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, and that if they didn't have like a plan set in stone to move towards the future in sort of a rebuild, and they were trying to go at it one more time, if they fell flat on their face while doing that, I felt that that blame was going to be put on Vrabel. And last year, I look at some of the decisions that Vrabel made. You know, Malik Willis being put as the backup and how that really backfired on the season. Bringing Todd Downey back and having him as offensive coordinator, which I think really affected the team. You know, Dylan Raiden's not getting a solution at right tackle, which, you know, the coach has to let the GM know, like, hey, I think this is going to work out. If not, you need to go get somebody else. I think he had belief that Dylan Raiden's was going to make that move, and obviously that kind of fell flat on their face and put Nicholas Petit-Ferrer in a bad situation as well. So there were things last season that Mike Vrabel did, but the fact that they've got Will Levis, I think that now Vrabel's job is in the hands of Will Levis. If Will Levis pans out, then Mike Vrabel is going to be here for the long haul. But if he doesn't, and that was the wrong move, Rand Carthon's not going to get blamed for that. He came into a tough situation with an aging quarterback, an aging roster, and a team that's in turnover. You can't blame him his first year for trying to go out and make a move for the future in his first draft. Vrabel's been here for a while. And this has to work out for him, because his time came, the core group that he won with is now starting to move out, and now his job depends on how this new core does. Because if it doesn't, and he keeps losing, coaches get fired. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your resume is. If you keep losing, you're going to get fired. So I think that, with Vrabel, having that contingency plan is not going to put him on the hot seat this offseason, but now, if things do start to spiral out of control, he is the one to blame.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Will Levis will be the determining factor in Mike Vrabel's success. Unless, you know, somehow they go and make a huge splash and get a quarterback next year and decide they're already ready to move off of him. We've seen crazier things happen. I think about in San Francisco. You know, Trey Lance, that whole situation, you know, Lynch and Shanahan, they kept winning, right? So if you're winning and Will Levis doesn't pan out, but you're still winning and you find a solution at quarterback, okay, different story. But that's more far-fetched than if, you know, Will Levis, you move him into that starting role and it doesn't pan out. I do think, and it's been said before, we say it all the time, coaches and GMs' futures are often based on quarterback success. And quarterback success has a lot to do with if your team is winning or losing. Juni was fired up this morning when he came in. We will tell you why next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
I think 5 years from now, the NFL schedule release will be nearly as big of a production as the NFL draft. I think there'll be a massive live event with musical acts, fans, celebrities, and I think that they will announce it and unveil the schedule just nearly in the same kind of ballpark of stature as the NFL draft. I think it's going to get that big. That is the, if you ever want to explain to someone, to your kids, or just someone at work, someone you're talking to, how big is the NFL? How popular is it? Just the schedule of games for the NFL is bigger than the championship games in most other sports. Just a piece of paper with the schedule, Indianapolis at TEN, BAL at CIN, it's gold. It's better than the game. It's not just better than the games, it's better than the playoff games. It's bigger, more popular, more reactive than some of the championship games of other sports. So I'm not even joking. Is the NFL schedule release, which is going to be in a couple days on Thursday, is it a top 10 sports day in America in 2023?
That was Kyle Brandon on Good Morning Football talking about the NFL schedule release. And I know somebody who is sitting right next to me right now who is on the exact same page as him. Welcome back in, Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, in for Chase McCabe, Nick Kieser. We are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios this morning. How do you feel about the NFL schedule release? Do you think that it could become an entire production someday, as Kyle Brandt said on Good Morning Football? I mean, honestly, how big the draft has become in the last 10, 15 years, it has become, and Robbie and I were talking about this morning, it has become so incredibly huge. And to Kyle Brandt's point, I mean, the draft has become bigger than some other sports championships or postseason play. It has become something that is a must watch. It has become a talking point on sports talk radio, on national media coverage for months and months and months. And I mean, the NFL schedule release, it's not quite at the draft level, but I mean, it's big. I know how you feel about it. I know you are very passionate about the Rob rant this morning, who doesn't understand why it's a big deal. Robbie and I were kind of on the same page. We understand why people get excited, but to make your travel plans and all these things. But I think if it's going to become a big production, like Kyle Brandon said, you can't know the opponents at all. Obviously, you know the divisional opponents.
Well, I mean, the way it's structured, you're going to know the opponents. Like, the way the NFL schedule is structured is, you know, each division is on a rotation. So Every 4 years, you're going to play a different division in the NFC. Every 3 years, you're going to get matched up with a different division in the AFC. And it's a constant rotation. And then in your own conference, you're going to play the same teams that finish in the same place as you. So the Titans finish second. They're going to play the other three teams that finish second, no matter what, in the AFC. So that's how you kind of format and build this up together. But
I understand that. But what I'm saying is, like, they'll announce at one point, okay, these are all the teams, and just put it together. Just wait and just make it all the, like, whole thing itself.
I agree.
Even if you already know, you know, who you're playing, is what I'm saying.
I agree. And I would say this. If I had the choice, and I'm not trying to flex here. I have two TVs in the living room, so I can watch an NBA playoff game.
Flex, Junie, flex.
And the NFL schedule show. But if I only had one TV and you're asking me whether or not I want to see the NFL schedule release or game 6 of the Celtics and 76ers, I'm watching the NFL schedule release.
Junie.
That's just me. Hey, to each their own. To each their own. I'm just telling you what's more important to me. I know it's been a great series, and I like this 76ers and Boston series. It's great, but I'm choosing the NFL schedule release show. Now, why am I so passionate about this? Because there's so many things that matter, and especially for a team like the Titans, that there's so many question marks with this entire roster and how it's going to pan out. They can get every single bit of help that they can that can impact their season, and I'm going to start with why. So let's look at the Titans and where they play this year. So it is important at what time of the year you play certain opponents. Okay, the Titans travel to Cleveland and Pittsburgh this year. Both of these places are some of the hardest places to kick in the entire NFL. What are the Titans missing? A kicker. And where, like, what time of year do you not want to go play in Cleveland and Pittsburgh?
Winter.
In the winter. So if you're playing a late November, December, or even a January game, that's going to be a tough spot to go and play. They also play in Miami. Now, Miami is a tough place to play in the very beginning of the season. We have heard a lot of NFL players talk about dehydration, getting overheated, northern teams that cramping. Aren't used to that, yes, cramping, all that stuff. So they play at Miami and in Tampa this year, so both of which could be, you know, if that's a September game, Treylon Burks is going to, you know, he's going to really need his conditioning up and maybe some assistance and maybe a humidifier or something to get those lungs pumping because that could affect them. So when your team is going to play on primetime, I mean, everybody wants their team to be on national television and to have a party, have somebody, have people come over and enjoy some Monday night, Sunday night, Thursday night football. That is very important, but I think that that's kind of on the lower scale of things. When are your divisional games? Is also super, super important, okay? I reflect back into the 2019 season when the Titans went on their AFC championship run. They were a borderline fringe playoff team. They ended up going 9-7. Who did they play the last week of the season? Do you know?
I'm assuming it was a divisional opponent.
It was a divisional opponent, but it was the Houston Texans who had already locked up the division and rested their starters, which helped the Titans get into the playoffs. So let's say the Titans this year are playing the Jacksonville Jaguars in Week 18. And let's say the Jags, who are heavy favorites in the AFC South, have already locked up the division. If the Titans are where we think they might be, around that 7-8-9-win team, if they're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars at the end of the year and Jacksonville wants to rest their starters to go into the playoffs, that could be a key situation to where the Titans could get a win in order to get them over the hump to make the playoffs. And then lastly, Thursday night football, okay? Thursday night football is huge for this aspect that the home team has such an advantage on a short week and not having to travel. And even this year, where you're eligible to have two Thursday night football games, if you have two Thursday night football games instead of none, because the NFL is not forcing every single team to play on Thursday night football this year, that's also going to impact your season. Let's say the Titans don't have any Thursday night games. That's going to be huge. That would be huge for this team to get that extra rest, especially with all the injuries that they've accumulated over the last 2 years. And if they have two Thursday night football games, oh, Michelle, that is not good for this team. That is not good for this team. So to say that it doesn't matter and that it's not important is absolutely blasphemous to me, because this stuff does matter on what time of year, who you're playing, when and where, and how the schedule falls in your favor.
I understand those points, Junie. I really do. But I think sometimes, you know, you can make all of those points ahead of time. And when we find out when these specific games are for Tennessee, when their divisional matchups are, when they play in Miami, and when they play in Pittsburgh or Cleveland, and the weather aspects. But then when you actually go into a season, how often do we see those things pan out? I'm not saying they're not factors. They are. But at the end of the day, what's going to mean more? The Tennessee Titans wide receiver core or them playing in Miami in September?
Oh, I mean, definitely personnel has much more to do with it. But to say that it doesn't matter or it doesn't play a part in the success of a season, I would say is definitely important. Go ahead.
And I'll play devil's advocate for a little bit, because I think what Robbie was saying, he's like, I just don't understand the hype. I don't think he wasn't saying it doesn't matter. I think it was more along the lines of, I don't understand the hype. And the argument I brought to the table was the NFL has become so incredibly dominant and takes over every sport over and over again. You know, the draft is more popular than regular season NBA, free agency, right? Training camp, regular season. I mean, it has just become so incredibly dominant, and so many aspects of it are, I mean, they're an entertainment value, right? the draft is such a huge production. Releasing the schedule is so huge because the fan base and just the dominance that it has over our entire country is so incredibly powerful.
No, and I absolutely agree. And as a fan, you know, as a fan myself, you know, I always look at...
You're
like,
a fan? You're an NFL fan?
Yeah, just maybe just a little bit. But, you know, for me, I always like look ahead because, you know, my life goal is to go to every single NFL stadium. That is what I want to do.
It's hard because I keep remaking them all.
And so I always like kind of look ahead, like, you know, Chicago, Soldier Field, I'd really like to get there before they kind of...
Don't go to that one in the winter.
Move in. Yeah. No, I've heard that one. But, you know, I try and schedule this. So, like, this season, you know, Steelers go and play the Rams out in L.A., and I want to go see, you know, SoFi. And it's going to matter to me about, like, you know, when I can go and travel plans and all that. So it's not only just, like, on the field and how things match up and how things are squared away with those intangibles. But, you know, like you all had touched on, which I think you all did well, was, you know, fans are excited to know, like, when they're scheduling vacations and when they're scheduling where. Because, you know, people look ahead like me, like, oh, you know, my team's going to go play in Green Bay this year. Like, I've always wanted to go to Lambeau. You know, my team's going up to New York. Like, I've never been to New York. I'd love to go and kind of...
Jersey.
And do all that stuff. But, well, it's only a 40-minute train. It's not that bad. And it's right across the river. So, either way, I just think it's super exciting. As popular as the NFL is, it's just an overabundantly popular than the next professional sport in this country. And if they were to do a show and not, you know, release anything, and they just went week by week and just,
yeah,
bam,
that'd be fun.
Here's week one, bam, here's week two. People will tune into that, like, that with no shadow of a doubt. So I think it's a great time of year, and especially, you know, since we're at that time where the draft is over, you know, free agency has really, really died down. We're not into training camp yet. This is something to get excited for football fans that are really looking for something, and maybe they're not as into hockey and basketball, you know, as we are.
And, Judy, I think you brought up a good point, too, about the divisional games, because I remember when the schedule got released last year and the Tennessee Titans would play the Colts. I mean, they had already faced them twice before Halloween. Right. And you look at that placement, and I mean, if they were to play the Jags earlier and not week 18, maybe they would have been able to lock up the division before Ryan Tannehill ended up getting hurt. Right. They had a 95% or 97% chance to win the division. And then a lot can happen between week 10 and week 18.
Yeah, because, I mean, we saw it was a tale of two seasons for the Titans and Jags. To start the season, the Jags were awful. You know, they hit a bunch of rough patches, lost to some teams that at the end of the year, you look back and you're like, well, how did Jacksonville, you know, finish this way, but, you know, lose to, you know, Denver earlier in the year? It just doesn't make sense. So if the Titans had played the Jags when, you know, they were 7-3 and they were rolling early on in the year before a bunch of the injuries, you know, how would that have changed the season? So these things do matter. And I'm really excited to see, you know, how the schedule does lay out for the Titans, because I think if it is favorable, you know, I think that that could help them as a team that's looking like a borderline, you know, 7-9-1 team that could be in play for a wild card spot.
The Milwaukee Admirals will be in the division finals versus the Texas Stars coming up on Friday the 12th. We'll have Carl Taylor, the head coach of the Admirals, join us at 9:45. But Barrett Trotz, the new GM of the Nashville Predators, joined Robbie and I this morning and had some interesting thoughts on John Hines' future with the Preds. We'll get all to that next on Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Barry Trotz with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Barry, you talked about, you know, the status of John Hines at the end of the season press conference, and now he's under contract, but some evaluation still needs to take place. Where are you at in terms of the evaluation of John Hines, and is there any news on what his status looks like for next year?
No, I said at the press conference, I'm going to evaluate. I think John did a terrific job, as I said. When I came on, we sort of moved four players at the trade deadline. He lost eight players to injury, and he continued to, you know, forge on with the group. And what I like about what John did is he just coached the group that he had. And I know John and his staff are good coaches. I sat in their meetings. I listened to them. I understand what they're doing. So with John, I just said, you know, for my perspective, everybody is going to be evaluated, and also I'm going to evaluate other organizations too. So if I can improve in any aspect of our organization, be it coaching or development, I'm going to try to do that. But I can tell you the staff is a really good staff. They know what they're doing, and I have a lot of trust in them.
That was Barry Trotz earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Welcome back in to Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, in for Chase McCabe today. Nick Kieser with us. We are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios this morning. Barry Trotz, when asked about John Hines and his job security with the Nashville Predators, gave a similar answer that he gave, you know, with at the end of season press conference, that he's still evaluating that position. The NHL playoffs are still going on. The AHL postseason play is still going on right now. He's still evaluating it, but also ended that comment by saying something along the lines of, you know, he would make a change, whether it be a player or a coach, if it would help improve the team. When first hearing that, Junie, what was kind of just your initial takeaway by his response and kind of non-committal response on John Hines?
It was non-committal, but he also praised him for the adversity that mm-hmm. he got over. So what I kind of think, and this may be really off base, but I just think he's kind of keeping John Hines on his toes a little bit. And he wants him to kind of motivate him a bit, that to kind of make him feel that, you know, this is really your last shot. You know, in the beginning of last season, the expectation was the Preds were a playoff team last year. You know, they had a tough injury with UC Saros going in with the eventual Stanley Cup champions, Colorado Avalanche, mm-hmm. and they got absolutely demolished. And when you get UC back and then you go out and get Nina Ryder and McDonough, the expectation was those two guys are going to be like the two pieces that are going to enhance the team. And obviously the Preds had a super slow start out the gate. Mm-hmm. They were trying to fight and claw their way back into the playoff conversation. And then something struck with this team with the trade deadline, moving off all the players, all the injuries, and the lineup just got completely flipped over on his head. And John Hines made the most of it. And so what I think is that, you know, after the last three seasons of it being a tale of two halves, you know, so one half of the season is really bad, the other half is really good, I just think that this is his last opportunity to really try and seize it and hone in on it. I think if the Preds start off to a slow start, there will be a coaching change in the middle of the season next year. Now, if John Hines can come out and show that he's improving and make it through the entire season, depending on where the Preds fall, in the scheme of things and how the young players progress coming from Milwaukee, if we can see guys like a Juuso Parsonen and a Tommy Novak, you know, get called up again and make immediate impact with some extra time up in Milwaukee next season, then I would say John Hines could stay here for a little bit longer. But with all that being said, I don't see an extension coming. I think they're going to let this contract play out and let this season be the dictator on what is going to be the future of John Hines and the Nashville Predators.
I think when I initially heard that response, I wasn't too surprised considering he said something very similar, as I mentioned, at the end of your press conference. But, you know, a lot of times we hear a general manager or even a coach when talking about, you know, somebody's future with an organization, whether it be a Ryan Tannehill, a Derrick Henry, a John Hines, whoever it may be, a lot of times the easy answer is, well, they're still under contract. You know, John Hines is under contract through the next year, right? That's usually an easy answer on, have you evaluated him? What does it look like right now? It's May 10th. The Predators haven't played hockey in a really long time. So I think, you know, hearing that from Barry Trotz of, you know, we are still evaluating, it gives me the sense of, does he have his eye on somebody who is coaching right now in a playoff series, whether that be in the NHL, whether that be in the AHL? You know, I know a lot of people have been calling for Carl Taylor. He's still coaching. They have a game for the divisional round this Friday. Friday. I had to do math really quick in my head. Or an assistant on an NHL team right now. But something that does, you know, halt me towards this situation is that the Nashville Predators are an NHL organization that hasn't had a lot of coaching turnover. And I think that that's something that we do see a lot in the NHL. It's very common. I mean, I look at the Rangers, for instance, right? They had a very successful year. They get knocked out in a playoff series against the New Jersey Devils, and their coach is fired. It's not rare to happen in the NHL, and I would say, you know, out of every professional league, the NHL probably has the most turnover of, you know, if it's not working out, yep, quickly move on and get somebody else in there. But the Nashville Predators have been really unique that they haven't had a lot of coaches in their 25 years of being an organization, and Barry Trotz knows that firsthand.
And that's a sign of a good organization. And this is something that I have preached to you for a long time, that, you know, when teams are turning over constantly at GM and head coach, that it doesn't keep a consistent voice and a consistent message, and it hurts the culture of a franchise. And, you know, this is professional sports. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be a contender every single year. You're not going to win every single – of course, there's always outliers. But you have to be like an old, stable franchise that's been around for a long time, you know, that constantly wins. And the Predators just aren't that. You know, they were an expansion franchise in the 90s. They're still a little bit on the newer side to the NHL compared to other teams. And it's like, for them to be an expansion team in the late 90s and for them to only have – three head coaches in that span and only one GM up until this year, mm-hmm. It speaks volumes of how the culture is being built. And yes, John Hines has not blown people away, but I just think that this team was kind of in transition, mm-hmm. and I think it was more of less on David Poyle not wanting to move off of this main core and not seeing the light until this year. Because you got to think, you know Laviolette got fired, I think it was in 2019, Nick? Did Laviolette get fired in 2019, middle of the season?
It was right after the Winter Classic in 2020. So it was 1920.
Okay, so he came in, yeah, that COVID.
So you got to think that with that, the core was not playing at its best. You know, they had just came off the loss to Dallas, and with everything – the core had kind of reached its peak, and ever since then they've just kind of been going downhill ever since then. And so now that we see these young guys coming up from Milwaukee, and what has been the reason that John Hines was hired is his ability to develop young players. I think he deserves the opportunity with the success of this young group to be able to come back and start the season next year. And if it doesn't pan out, then make a move in the season or wait till the end of the season. But I just think with the success with the young players, the reason he was hired, that he should have the opportunity to at least see what he can do next year, you know, combining the healthy veterans that are still here and the young players that showed a lot of promise towards the end of the season.
Well, and I think, too, to the point of after the trade deadline, you know, it could be really easy for older players to not buy in, to not want to, you know, put their bodies out there day in and day out, and to be able to get those guys motivated along with the younger guys to end up to find yourself, you know, almost in a playoff spot with only the last two games of the season not mattering. But Junie, if you just take like a step back and we kind of look at the Nashville sports world as a whole, because I just kind of thought of this as we were talking about it and as we've had these offseason conversations regarding the Tennessee Titans or the Nashville Predators. You know, the Predators were established in 97 and the Oilers came to Tennessee in 97, and then they obviously eventually changed their name to the Tennessee Titans. But I think it's really interesting because you've watched these teams both grow together here as the city of Nashville has grown. And I think that that's why, you know, the fan bases, especially the Preds and, you know, they're so passionate about both organizations. And I think when you look at the time in which both teams were at their peak, you know, you think of that Laviolette era, the 2018-2019 era, you think of the Tennessee Titans in 2019 and also in 2020, right? They both were at the highest, both they both were at the height of what this city has seen in professional sports. You know, I think, well, the Preds were a couple years before that 2017 year, but in that range of years, you know, you were in the city of Nashville experiencing high level, you know, NHL playoffs, you know, NFL playoffs, high level success in both teams. And now, you know, we're seeing the page turn. Now it's 2023 and we're seeing kind of the torch pass, right? It's those windows have stayed open And now it's the page turning into the next era of both franchises. You know, they're the same age. They're both 25 years old, which is kind of crazy because we're both 25 years old. 97 is the year I was born, and probably you too.
96. By 15 days, okay. December 15th.
Okay, well, there you go. You know, so, but we're both seeing that transition right now. And, you know, to watch this fan base and see them get so high and so close to a Stanley Cup, or see, you know, Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry go to an AFC championship. They've been so close. And then for the window kind of to close and now to restart it, new general managers, and begin that rebuild, it's tough. Because sometimes it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you have been so high and it took so long to get there.
And it's the kind of same conversation, because we were just talking about, you know, Mike Vrabel in this situation. Like, is he on the hot seat? Both of these teams have a direction. And can these coaches lead them into that direction? That's going to be the story of these two coaches' jobs. And I think they kind of play into each other. The Preds obviously unloaded. You know, John Hines played well with the young core of guys that came up from Milwaukee. And so, you know, it's all going to really decide for both teams on you know, how this transition goes, and can they get back to their winning ways sooner rather than later. And I think that at least with how the season ended, John Hines deserves to start the season at least as the Predators head coach in October.
Well, a lot of the guys who did the winning here in Nashville with the Preds are also doing a lot of winning with the Milwaukee Admirals. And Carl Taylor, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, will join us next, coming up on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe. Nick Kieser with us as well. We're live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios this morning. And now we're going to go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Milwaukee Admirals head coach, Carl Taylor. Carl, thanks for hopping on with us this morning.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Well, we know that you have been very busy. You guys have the division finals coming up this Friday against the Texas Stars. You actually, you know, had quite a stint there with the Stars as an assistant coach. What is it like now to be kind of on the opposite side, playing for the Calder Cup? I mean, is it kind of a full circle moment for you, Carl?
I think we moved past it. It's been 5 years now. But there are some great memories we had when we were in Austin working with Dallas. It was a great time, great organization. We had a great playoff run to the finals, the one season. So very good memories, outstanding place to work, but very excited to focus on what we're doing here. But it's far enough away now that we're very focused and we're full Milwaukee Admiral blue.
I love it. Full Milwaukee Admiral blue. Well, a lot of your players, you know, Luke Evangelista, a lot of them have played up here in Nashville and have really added a little excitement to the Predators fan base, watching them be so successful in the last couple weeks of the season here. And now to be even successful, you know, heading into the Milwaukee Admirals in the postseason, what was it like for you as a coach to see them so successful in the NHL this year, and then also, you know, be able to come back and try to win a cup with you all?
Well, I would speak for our whole staff. Greg Rallo and Scott Ford are my two assistants, and I think there's a lot of pride, a lot of excitement at how well the fellas did. It wasn't just like they were there killing minutes. They were performing. They were producing. So a lot of pride from our coaching staff and seeing the guys have success. When they return, obviously we had some a little bit of a longer time to prepare, which was good, to get our team back together and so sort out and get through the storming phase and get everything shuffled and to survive the first round, which was very difficult, and it is everywhere, as you can see in the NHL and in the American League. Basically, in 2 weeks, you go from 32 teams down to 8. So we're down to 8 teams now, which is a drastic drop-off, with 24 teams getting eliminated. So lots of pride seeing those guys have success. Lots of excitement to get through the first round, which is very difficult. And now we're real dialed in trying to get ready for a tough Texas team.
Carl Taylor, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, joins us right now. Carl, a guy who we have watched a lot from up here in Nashville is Yaroslav Askarov. Say that 10 times fast. He's had a lot of, you know, fun videos that have kind of surfaced on social media. One of him, you know, bench pressing the goalpost or the splits, and his play has just been so exciting. What has it been like for you to coach a player like that, which is so much personality, and he just plays with every bit of his being out there?
Yeah, well, I would say right out of the gate, Dave Rucker, our goalie coach, has done an outstanding job with both Devin Cooley and Askey. So a lot of growth and development from both individuals we have here. I think with Yaro, he's just an individual who has learned a lot and grown a lot this year. You got to remember, he came from Russia. He's 20 years old. He's in a new country, new language, different hockey. It was a lot. And for him to handle that early on, have the success he did, but also understand there was room for growth, he's still just a young man learning. So he's in the perfect spot right now. He's learning. He's developing. He's being challenged. Obviously, he played our 5 games in the first round. All those things are big moments and difficult things for him to work through. And fortunately, he's progressing towards understanding and improving his game and cleaning up all the professional, all the stuff that we want from a young player developing. He's going in the right direction. He's still got more room to grow, but he's definitely proceeding in the correct manner.
We're talking to Carl Taylor, head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals. Carl, speaking of Askarov and viral videos, there was a viral video earlier this season when you all played the Texas Stars of a little bit of a goalie bout between him and Remy Poirier. So what did you say to Askarov after that, and how are we going to kind of keep these guys a little bit level-headed so we can kind of keep him in the game and get a big series win for the Admirals?
Yeah, I don't think that's a real consideration for either team moving into the series. But, you know, I don't think there's a goalie in the world that doesn't want to get a goalie fight. I think everyone would love to have that opportunity to get the fans fired up and all the different things. So it sometimes it happens. It's not something that happens all the time. There's been 2 in the 5 years that I've been here in Milwaukee. So sometimes they just occur. So not a focus for us, not something we're looking at, even though it might have got a million hits online.
Oh, yeah, well, Carl, it was absolutely, I mean, we were all just up in awe about it, just thinking about it, because, you know, we talk about Askarov a lot, so seeing that happen was absolutely awesome. But I want to go into some of these young guys, some of these prospects here. You know, we saw Tommy Novak make an appearance in 2021 for a short stint with the Preds. Didn't really produce that much. Got sent back to Milwaukee and obviously had a breakout season this year. What's a guy on the team right now that's maybe not getting a ton of attention from Predators fans? And what guy do you see that has the potential to break out and maybe take that step to come up here and play in the NHL?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of good prospects here, and you guys got to see a few of them. I think for someone that hasn't gone up or had that opportunity yet, I think Adam Willsby is a guy to keep an eye on. He's a first-year defenseman and an individual who's very professional, very dialed in, has had lots of growth in his game this year. He's a guy that people should keep an eye on. His skating and his awareness and how detailed he is with his stick, how detailed he is in his defending. He's similar to a Spencer Stastny, not quite the same level of skater because Stas is very elite in that area. Wills is still a great skater. So he's probably a guy that people haven't had a lot of focus on that is a really good prospect and someone who has a chance to develop into something special.
Carl, quickly for you, we had Luke Evangelista on earlier this morning, and we got to know him pretty well up here with the Preds, but he's been such a key piece for you all in Milwaukee. What can you just touch on just to tell people why he's such a special player and what he adds, you know, to this team and how important he will be, you know, as you guys head into this next series?
Yeah, no, Luke's produced for us in the first round. You know, he's a great young guy. He's got a lot of personality. I think in the locker room, he's a glue guy for us, which we didn't expect. So basically he's a guy that is a positive influence and really is, keeps the guys together, helps them through difficult circumstances. And as a first-year young player, that's unusual. So there's lots of good qualities that he's shown off the ice outside of what he does on the ice. But he's just a guy that we gave a lot of opportunity to early, and he grabbed it. So he was able to take that opportunity, not let it slip by, not let someone else grab it. He hung on to it. He was on a great line with Cole Snyder and Thomas Novak to start the season, and they had a lot of success, and he's carried that over, obviously here, but also in Nashville when he was up there.
What is it like for you, Carl, as a coach, to see a young guy like Luke maybe get some opportunity? And like you said, he was a guy who you didn't think at first would be able to, you know, kind of walk in and have such an impact on the team, but not only see them, you know, grow and produce on the ice, but be a big leader in the locker room.
Yeah, it's surprising. It's these young guys come in here now, and there's probably, everyone talks about this now, there's no moment they're not ready for. You take a look at also like a Kimmel that we have brought in at the end of the season, and he's done quite well. There's just, they're prepped, they're prepared, they've gone through a lot of training. There's no moment that they're not ready for or it's too big for them, which is unusual. There's always going to be an adjustment for the young guys coming in. It just seems the new age players coming in expecting success and getting it sooner based on their development and where they come from. When you look at Luke, you know, he's had a great training grounds playing for the London Knights and the Hunter brothers, and being able to learn from guys that have had a lot of success in the NHL, but also developing players at the junior level.
Well, Carl, thank you so much for taking some time to join us this morning, and good luck this weekend in your series coming up.
Appreciate it, Carl.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Yep, you too. That was Carl Taylor, head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals. They will have their first game Friday. Texas at Milwaukee. This will be a home game for them at 7 p.m. Coming up next, Junie and I are going to switch the conversation to the Tennessee Titans. I want to pose a question to Junie and get his thoughts on this. Coming up next on Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.